our family speaks in code. We have a shorthand that we have developed in our house, mostly punchlines or quotes that we've learned and liked along the way. Instead of saying a lot of words, sometimes we will just say a phrase and everyone in the family knows what is meant. Like when something's not quite right, but it's not wrong enough that we want to change it, we use this punchline from an old cowboy joke and say, "That's just the way I like it." Or when we thought we were done, but it turns out that there's much more to do, we use the old Toad and Frog storyline that says, "Ooh, one very last cookie." Or if someone says something brilliant, something exceedingly smart, we quote a friend of our kids who, when he was growing up, used to say, "Wow, that's a really idea." We also quote that same friend when we don't know how long something's going to take. And we say, "Well, how many Barneys is that?" Because their friend always measured time in terms of how many Barney shows he would have to watch until our kids could come out and play with him. When we're in trouble and things are getting worse, when things are going from bad to worse, we quote an old sailor cartoon we used to watch, where the sailor's ship keeps sinking pretty quickly, and he goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." That means we're in trouble and going down fast. We even have a code for our codes. Most people call those inside jokes. We call them A&Fs. A&Fs, because a friend of ours who did not like the fact that he didn't understand what we were talking about because we talked in code all the time, said, "I can't stand your inside jokes. They make me feel alienated and frustrated." And we said, "Oh, A&F." So now we tell A&Fs all the time to alienate and frustrate people. Not really, but that's how he felt. I would like to introduce you today to one of our family's most theologically important and practically thrilling A&Fs. But first, a couple stories. Cape Girardeau, Missouri. A car left the road, overturned as it went down the hill, ended up upside down in a ditch. Moments later, a busload of Christian teenagers happened to be driving by, and they saw the car in the ditch. They jumped out of the bus. They ran to the car. They saw an elderly driver pinned inside. 3 feet of water in the ditch. If the man was not crushed by flipping over, he would soon drown. So they all jumped in the water and somehow lifted the Buick on its nose to get the man out. By the time police arrived, teens had Loy Hampton safely up out of his car, up to the roadside, and they were all sitting around him, comforting him and praying for him. Mr. Hampton was taken to and released from the hospital that same night. The driver of the rented bus of the Christian teens usually takes a different route. He almost always goes a different way when they're traveling together, but that night he chose to go down that road. He says he's not sure why he went that way. He's only ever gone that way that time. Pretty lucky. An ambulance in Stockholm, Sweden was racing to the hospital with a dying man inside. The man had a chunk of steak lodged deep in his throat, and no matter who tried, they could not help him get it out. He was suffocating to death. On the way to the hospital, at an intersection near the hospital, the ambulance collided with another car, and the jolt of the collision dislodged the meat, and the man was fine. Pretty lucky. Port Pierce, South Dakota, motorist Rocky O'Daniel had left early from work, a little early from work. He was driving home. He approached the Bad River Bridge. He saw lots of panicky youngsters over on the bank. So Rocky stopped and they yelled, "Someone was drowning. A young boy had fallen through the ice. Somebody should help him." So Rocky O'Daniel jumped from his car and rescued the child. The boy he saved was Alan O'Daniel, age 6, Rocky's son. Pretty lucky he had left work a little early that day. Someone broke into Bruce Breedlove's home and stole his computer. Mr. Breedlove has 2 computers. The thief took one of them and ran. Mr. Breedlove has 2 computers. One of them is broken. He was going to throw it out. That's the one that got stolen. Pretty lucky. Do you believe in luck? I've been waiting to ask you this question since we started this series about Joseph. Luck, just lucky, sheer luck, happenstance, good fortune, lucky break, good karma, unbelievable turn of events. Do you believe in luck? Because I do not. And I would like to offer you something way better, something you can build your life around, something great. And that would be providence. Providence is God's ongoing involvement in the world to get it just where he intends it to be. Providence is the everyday stuff God arranges in your life to accomplish his objectives in the world. God wants certain things to happen, and when he takes steps to help those things come to be, we call that providence. In his love, from his kindness, with his power, God orchestrates our lives, providentially intruding, pushing here, blocking there, opening this door, closing that one. Have you heard that famous line? Famous saying, when one door closes, another one opens. Other than that, it's a really good car. That last part's not part. When one door closes, another one opens. But the idea is that God in providence is working in our lives for good, allowing us to meet this person, dropping that opportunity on us when we're ready for it, inspiring an idea at just the right time, arranging, orchestrating, guiding, directing, doing stuff to get us where he wants us to be. That's providence. And I do not believe in luck. I believe in providence, totally. Greg Powers, Coos Bay, Oregon, woke up blind. For no reason at all that they could tell. He had gone to sleep normal. He woke up with no sight, zero. He was a construction worker in his 20s. Tests showed nothing. His wife, a Christian lady, prayed hard for her husband. So did her whole church, but he could not see. For 2 weeks, he woke up every day blind. One day, he was groping his way to the kitchen. He tripped and fell and hit his head on the table, hit his head pretty hard, knocked himself out. When his wife revived him, Greg could see again, fine. He had his sight back. But they said they would need to do a CT scan to see what had happened. They discovered while they were doing that scan a totally unrelated aneurysm. Rushed him into surgery that moment and took care of the ballooning blood vessel, almost for sure if he hadn't been blind, if he hadn't tripped, if they hadn't done the CT scan, that would have exploded in his brain and killed him without warning. So pretty lucky he was blind for a while, huh? Or maybe God helped the doctors locate something they weren't even looking for in God's providence. Now, some people look at all those things that I just said and they cannot see God's hand at all. Their worldview does not include a loving, all-powerful, all-wise God. So when they see stuff happening serendipitously, they say, wow, you're so lucky. Just an amazing coincidence how timelines crossed in such a good way. But I believe that God governs in the affairs of men and that he knows what's going on in our lives and that he often intervenes for good. Case in point, Joseph. Joseph, a teenager through whom God said, I'm going to save the world. If God can get Joseph to be the right kind of guy in the right place at the right time, Joseph can be the guy who will save the nation of Egypt, who will save the nation of Israel, who will save all the nations on earth. People will be able to live instead of die if God can get Joseph trained and in position. If God can arrange for Joseph to become Egypt's vice president, Joseph can help small children everywhere in the world not starve. But at age 17, Joseph can't be that because he can't even speak Egyptian, much less get voted into high office there. He only speaks Hebrew. He's never even been to Egypt, so what is a God to do? Well, Joseph's brothers hate Joseph. And God says, I can use that. His brothers get an evil idea that they should sell Joseph to a gang that's heading south. And God says, ooh, much cheaper than Uber. Very nice. Joseph is now being transported to Egypt, which is the right place, but he needs training in his new country. And the Midianite gang that he is with is greedy. And they say, we should sell this kid to the highest bidder. And God says, nice. I will let Joseph work in and around a key military leader in Egypt. On the job training, that'll be good. And after some of that, God needs Joseph to meet the king's food tester. Now, where can that happen? See, but Potiphar's wife has been reading way too many romance novels. And Pharaoh's got a really hot temper. And God uses both of those wrongs to make a right, because Joseph and the king's food guy end up in a jail together. But God needs the king to find out that Joseph can interpret dreams, so he gives the cupbearer a dream while he's in there with Joseph. And Joseph correctly explains it. But God needs Joseph to practice just a little bit more at running things. So the cupbearer, when he gets out, has a memory failure, and Joseph is in prison for 2 more years. But finally, when Joseph is prepped and ready to feed the world, Pharaoh has some bad dreams. God prods the wine taster's memory, and Joseph, who is now totally trained, ready to go, meets the Pharaoh at just the right time, and he ends up saving the whole world. Pretty lucky, huh? No, not lucky at all. Just good. God is good. Providence, totally in control. Joseph's life is a perfect picture of how God can arrange our lives to accomplish his purpose if we will look for it. And I'm not saying that we just need to be more positive in life. I'm not saying that we should just always be optimistic. Did you hear about the grandmother who had the really positive attitude? She was just really positive all the time. And one day she fell down the steps. And she stood up at the bottom of the stairs and she brushed herself off for a while. And then she said, "Wow, that's the fastest I've moved in years." I'm not asking you to be like that. We don't pretend bad things never happen or bad things aren't bad. They do happen. They are bad. Our confidence in God isn't an attitude we choose that denies the reality of the badness of some situations. It's an attitude that we choose based on the reality of providence, of God's trustworthiness. In Romans 15, Paul says, "Everything that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through endurance taught in the scriptures and the encouragement they provide, we might have hope." Our hope comes from the fact that God is bigger than anything that happens to us, that God works providentially. The secret behind Joseph's whole life is explained in Genesis 50. Joseph had forgiven his brothers at this point. He had brought his father and his whole extended family down to Egypt to live with him. And the family, when they got there, was treated like royalty because Joseph was royal. But after a while, their father died. The father's gone. And now the 10 brothers get scared to death that once dad's gone, Joseph is now going to take his revenge. They're still carrying around the guilt for what they did to him, even though he forgave them. Last week, we talked about forgiveness and how important that is if you want to live a healthy life. I've noticed that Christians often have the hardest time forgiving themselves. Like, we know God forgave us. We say that, we know that, but sometimes we are tricked into forgetting it, and we get stuck in our past. Joseph's brothers feared Joseph was now going to pound on them now that their dad was not there to protect them anymore. But in one of the greatest sentences in the whole Bible, Joseph shows how he survived when his life kept crashing down all around him all the time. Genesis 50 says, their father dies, the brothers come and bow down again, pleading for mercy again. And Joseph says to his brothers in verse 19, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God?" Verse 20, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Joseph's secret? He trusted God's providence big time. He trusted God no matter what happened. When good stuff happened, he knew that was from God and he thanked God. When bad stuff happened, do you know that bad stuff is not from God? Don't get mixed up. When evil comes into your life, God does not want that. God hates that. When Joseph's brothers beat him and stripped him and spit on him and pitted him and sold him, that was not of God. That was not God's plan for the world. When soldiers behead infants, heaven is not okay with that. When women and children are raped, when non-combatants are burned to death, as far as I can see in Scripture, God hates when bad stuff happens. But he permits it because he has limited himself by giving us, each of us, the power to choose what we will do. And stuff happens that God wishes never would happen. But the amazing, amazing, amazing thing is not that God stops every evil thing from happening. He clearly does not. The amazing thing is that God is so good and he is so powerful that he can take evil things and weave them around, twist them around so far that from bad, God creates good every time. What Joseph knew is that God is in control. That does not mean we get to escape bad stuff in life. Jesus said, "In this world, you will have bad stuff happen to you, but take heart, I have overcome the world." God's in control, meaning even when people around you make horrendously bad decisions, even when things around you go inconceivably awry, God can still use all of that for good if you will stick with him. And life is a lot better when you can say, like Joseph, "What you did to me really stinks. What just happens is really bad. But I trust God to work it out providentially so that in the end, this is even this is going to lead to good." Here are a couple things that a sense of providence will help you with. When you are clearly not in control, it is good to know that God is. Have you ever faced times in your life where you go, "Wow, I can't fix this. Have you ever gotten to a point where you've got nowhere left to go? You just want to give up? The disease is too advanced. The relationship is too far gone. The debt is too deep. The addiction's too strong. The time is too short. The days are too long. Have you ever found yourself really, really in trouble? Lisa Boyer is a lady who loves to skydive. She loves the feeling of free fall and then pulling the cord and drifting safely to earth. But one day her chute did not open, and she fell 12,000 feet to the earth. Can you imagine? What are you thinking as you're falling and the cord won't rip? Do you suppose Joseph felt much different than that during his 12 years as a slave? But somehow he knew that God might still come through in the end. And through bizarre circumstances, unforeseen, kind of unforeseeable, God came through in the end, both for Joseph and for skydiver Lisa. She fell from the sky. She was more than 2 miles high when it didn't work. 2 miles high, she landed at 80 miles per hour into a 4-foot deep sludge pond at a local sewage treatment plant. And she swam to safely and walked away with only minor injuries. What? Sometimes you're out of control, but if you serve the God of Joseph, he can still work things out. Earl Feathers is an elder for the Kingsport, Tennessee church, and he tells of the time when his daughter went out sailing off the coast of Florida with her husband. They hit a sandbar which severely damaged the rudder of their 16-foot boat. And while they tried to repair the rudder, the wind got so strong that it snapped off their mast. So now they have no sail and no rudder, and they started drifting helplessly out to sea. They drifted all night long. In the morning, there was only water. They knew they were in trouble. They only had 16 ounces of water that they had brought with them for an afternoon sail, so they began to pray hard. But for 2 days, they drifted, and the hope of being found got smaller and smaller. Finally, the husband gave up, laid down in the boat to wait to die. But his wife saw the dog that they had brought with them and how the dog was just sitting there looking at her trustingly, like the dog knew that she'd figure it out somehow. And the wife prayed, "Lord, help me to trust you with the same kind of trust that my dog has in me." And when she looked up on the horizon, she thought she saw a cross. And she kept watching, and it looked like the cross was coming towards her. And she awoke her husband, thought it might be a mirage, wanted to see if he saw it, and he saw it. It was real. It was not a cross. It was a mast of a ship. In fact, it was a big ship, a yacht. And at first, they were worried it was going to sail right by them without them getting its attention. But they soon realized, no, it was coming straight towards their boat, and it didn't see them. And then they feared it would cut their boat in half. So they started screaming like crazy. And a little boy on the bow of a ship saw them, raced back inside to tell his father. The yacht ended up pulling up beside them. They climbed aboard and were rescued. The most amazing part of this story is when the captain said, "That's weird. We've been on autopilot for several hours now, and we are 16 miles off course. That has never happened before." What? Now, some people would consider that a coincidence. Some people would say, "Wow, those people were lucky." But I think it has to do with God's providential involvement in their lives. Bishop Temple says, "When I pray, coincidences happen. When I don't, they never do." Okay, Greg Stokes was working with a team of 4 people to start a new church in Albany at the university. He was working with these 3 other people. One girl on the team had her rent due on Friday, $350. It was Tuesday, and the girl just did not have $350. They were doing good work there. They had just baptized their first student that week. It seemed like things were really moving. It was hard. They were eating a lot of mac and cheese, ramen soup, peanut butter and jelly when they could splurge a little. But they were trusting God to come through with enough to keep them going because of their work. So on Wednesday, they prayed and figured God would help them. The mail came, no money. On Thursday morning, they prayed. The mail came, no money. The rent's due by 5 p.m. on Friday, or the girl's going to lose her apartment and she won't be able to stay and help with the church. They wake up Friday morning. It's kind of weird because the girl said there was no hot water in their building, but what does that matter if she doesn't come up with $350 that day? She's gone anyway. So the team gets together that morning. They pray for God to provide. The mail comes. There are 3 envelopes. In the first envelope, $150 from a friend who said, "Just thought you might need this." In the second envelope, $100 from someone who supported the girl saying, "Praying God provides all you need." That's $250. She needs $350. They know that there's going to be $100 in the last envelope. They're so excited. They open up the third envelope. It's a pledge for $100 from a person who said they didn't have the money yet, but they were going to send it. And the team was so bummed. They needed $350 that day, and they almost got it, but they didn't get it, and they couldn't understand why God had come so close, but he didn't come through. And the young lady went back to her apartment that afternoon, preparing to pack up and move out, when she was met at her door by the complex supervisor, who said, "I'm really sorry to tell you this, but the hot water is still not working, and we cannot figure out what's wrong. But to show you we're really sorry for this inconvenience, we are not going to collect the rent until the water's fixed. I'm really sorry." Greg said they didn't get the hot water to come back on until Monday afternoon, just a couple hours after the remaining $100 came in the mail that day. What? Turns out God is a more masterful arranger of circumstances than we can stand, to the point where sometimes he arranges things better than we can even think up. I can't make up a story like that. That's too good. And we are pretty good at thinking things up, right? People are so. I heard a story this week about having to do with forgiveness and quick thinking. An 83-year-old lady told this story. She said, "I was in the McDonald's drive-thru this morning, and a young lady behind me leaned on her horn and started mouthing some ugly things to me because she thought I was taking too long to place my order. So when I got to the first window, I paid for her order along with mine. And the cashier must have told her what I did, because as we moved up, she then leaned out her window and waved to me and began mouthing to me, 'Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.' Probably she felt embarrassed that I had repaid her rudeness with kindness. When I got to the second window, I showed the server both receipts, and I took her food too. And now she has to go back to the end of the line and start all over again." She said, "Don't blow your horn at old people. We've been around for a long time." My point being that God has made us incredibly clever in how we can arrange things in life. But sometimes God's providential work is beyond what we can even believe. I mean, sometimes God does things and you can see them coming. Sometimes you can see things coming in life, right? Some things are obvious. Like, I was given this joke this week. It said, "And the award to the best neckwear goes to..." Well, would you look at that? It's a tie. See, that was, you saw that coming. That's easy. But sometimes God does things that you can't actually see coming. In fact, even when you see them, it's hard to believe. Last story, and you're not going to believe it, but this is a true story. But you're not going to believe it. But I'm going to tell you anyways, because God is great and greatly to be praised. Ken Gobb was driving on I-75 near Dayton, Ohio. His family was on vacation. He was with his wife and kids. They decided they had driven far enough. They needed a break, so they exited the highway. Barbara and the kids went into a restaurant, but Ken suddenly felt like he needed to just walk for a while. He said he would join his family soon. So he bought a pop, and he walked towards the Dairy Queen down the road. He said, "I was kind of feeling down. I loved the church I was preaching for, but I just felt drained, kind of empty." He said, "I was thinking that when I heard the phone. I heard ringing from a phone booth at a gas station on the corner. I thought, isn't somebody going to..." Oh, wait. Do you all know what a phone booth is? It's this old place where... He said, "Isn't somebody going to answer that?" Apparently, the attendant at the gas station didn't hear it. He just kept working on what he was doing. Gobb said, "Why doesn't somebody answer that phone?" He thought, it might be important. It might be an emergency. Somebody should answer the phone. So he stepped inside the phone booth, and he picked up the phone, and he said, "Hello," as he took a sip of his pop. And the operator said, "Long distance call for Ken Gobb." And he choked on his pop. He said, "You're crazy." Then he said, "This can't be." He said, "I was walking down the road, not bothering anyone, and the phone was ringing." The operator interrupted him and said, "Is Ken Gobb there? I have a long distance call for him." And he stopped and he said, "Yes, he is here." And then he added, "How in the world did you reach me here? I was walking down the road. The payphone started ringing. I just answered it on chance. You can't mean me." The operator said, "Well, is Mr. Gobb there or not?" Finally convinced that this was really happening, maybe candid camera or something, he said, "Yes, I'm Ken Gobb. Yes." Then another voice came over the phone. She said, "Yes, that's him, operator. That's Ken Gobb." And he listened as a lady said, "Mr. Gobb, I am Millie from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. You don't know me, Mr. God, but I'm desperate. Please help me. He said, what can I do for you? And she began to weep. Finally, she said, I was about to commit suicide. I had just finished writing a note. But then I decided to pray and tell God I really didn't want to do this. And then I remembered seeing you on television once. And I thought, if I could just talk to you, you could probably help me. I know it was impossible because I didn't know how to reach you or anyone who could help me find you. But then some numbers came to mind and I scribbled them down on a piece of paper. At that point, the lady started crying again. She said, I looked at the number and I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if I had a miracle from God and he's given me Ken's phone number? So I decided to call it. I can't believe I'm talking to you. Are you in your office in California? And he said, lady, I don't have an office in California. My office is in Yakima, Washington. She said, really? Then where are you? He said, don't you know you made the call? She said, I don't even know what area code I'm calling. I just dialed the number I had on this paper. He said, ma'am, you won't believe this, but I'm in a phone booth in Dayton, Ohio. She said, really? What are you doing there? He said, well, I'm answering the phone. It was ringing as I walked by, so I answered it, and he started to talk with her for a while. And at the end of the conversation, she asked Jesus to lead her out of her situation that she was in. And Mr. Gobb hung up the phone and stood in the phone booth thinking, what are the odds? With millions of phones in the world and innumerable combinations of numbers, only an amazing God could make that happen, to call it that number, that phone booth, that moment that he was walking by. He left his drink there, ran back to the restaurant, wondering if his family would believe him, wondering if anybody would believe him. And when he sat down, he said, Barb, you won't believe this, but God knows where I am. What do you think? Is that a true story? Is that story even possible? She called a random number. They decided to take a break from driving. He just decided to take a walk. He happened to be passing by a phone booth. What? And if you want, you can just write it off as a Pennsylvania lady being really, really lucky. But I'm thinking it has lots more to do with how tricky in a really good way our God is. He showed that in Joseph's life. He showed that in Mordecai and Esther's life. He showed that in Jesus's life. He has shown that in my life. In fact, so much has he shown that we have an A&F for this. In our house, when God does something really cool, obviously helpful from heaven, sometimes we say, wow, that was lucky. And we really stress the word lucky to clarify that's not at all what just happened here. But more often than that, when God does something truly extra special, and we can see it, when it is so clear that he went out of his way to bring good into our lives, when something great happens that should not have happened except for God's kindness, in our house, when we see God's hand in action, we say, wow, are we ever Rhode Island? Do you know that Providence is the capital of Rhode Island? So clearly God loves that state a lot. And we love being in that state a lot. We love Rhode Island. And every time something works out better than it possibly should or could, we bless God by saying, whoa, so Rhode Island. And we say that a lot in our house. He works all things together for good for those who love him. I sure hope you know that, and that you see that, and that you revel in it, and that you pass it on. God's providential will ultimately bringing you good from bad, because he is so Rhode Island. Let's pray.